This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn Geek from Lexington, Kentucky, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 27, 2011, episode number 302, sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, Horse World. Well, you're listening to a recorded version this morning as the whole gang from the Horse Radio Network is off this week. We'll be back live again on January 2nd, 2012, believe it or not, at 9 a.m. Eastern. We have a bunch of fun shows for you this week, though. And today we take a look back at some of our favorite moments from horse racing segments we did throughout the year. As you know, we are all horse racing fans, but Jamie is a huge fan, and we are going to get a couple of her favorite racing moments from the past year right after we thank Pfizer Animal Health for their support throughout the entire year of 2011. They have been terrific to work with, and their products certainly speak for themselves. Pfizer Animal Health is a leading manufacturer of animal health products in North America and international markets. Pfizer Animal Health's tried and true line of vaccines include West Nile Innovator, which is the first vaccine developed to help protect against equine West Nile virus. And then there's Innovator Combination Vaccines, the FluVac Innovator vaccine line, and many other quality products. Pfizer Animal Health did reintroduce Quest Plus Gel Dewormer. Quest Plus is back on the market and is available to horse owners and veterinarians now. And now the product is there for your winter deworming needs. And of course, that protects you against tapeworm threat as well as other serious internal parasites. You know, Pfizer Animal Health is passionate about the health and wellness of horses and all animals. For more information, go to PfizerAnimalHealth.com or QuestHorse.com. Of course, the leading story at the beginning of this year when it comes to racing was Zenyatta and would she win Horse of the Year. Let's listen and remember what her last few races were like and then hear the big announcement.
Kicked into gear, and here she comes, right on by! Zenyatta suddenly two in front. Here's the real Zen Master, and she's won 11!
Continues to come at them stride for stride. Lethal Heat holding on to it, though. Lethal Heat, a Lava's creation, Zenyatta! And now going to come to the outside. And Mike Smith takes dead aim on the leaders and asks Zenyatta to go. And just look at her go. Zenyatta strikes the front, just playing with him here. He is going back and forth. And it's Zenyatta, Lethal Heat running on at the rail. But Zenyatta with condescending ease. Summerbird in the red cap trot. And Zenyatta's come to the outside. Zenyatta coming flying on the grandstand side. Gio Ponti on the inside. Summerbird is right there. This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One we'll never forget. Back to my tune. Zenyatta now just looking at her though. Zenyatta is playing with them. Yet another unbelievable winner. If you don't have goosebumps right now, you don't like horse racing.
They're coming home under a hand ride. It is Mike Smith and Zenyatta in a triumphant return to Oakland. She wins the Apple Blossom Invitational by 3.5. Cam Jam second, beat fair third.
Coming to the 16th pole, St. Trinian's all out. Zenyatta trying to run her down on the money. St. Trinian's still a neck in front. Here's Zenyatta.
Here's
she comes. Switch is going to take over the lead from Moon to French. Zenyatta still has two lengths to make up and only a final furlong to do it. She's going to have to fly again. Switch has the lead at 65. Zenyatta with giant strides trying to get her. Here she comes. She's done it again. 19 for 19. 8 here at Hollywood Park. Just another perfect day for the Queen, Zenyatta.
The finalists for Horse of the Year are Blame, Goldakova, Zenyatta, Horse of the Year.
The 2010 Horse of the Year, Zenyatta. Yeah!
We did a special episode on January the 18th, which we called a Zenyatta Day. We had Mick X jockeys Frankie Lovato and Mig Richard Migliari. As part of that fun time, we want you to take a listen to the excitement of that day.
And just as we were talking about, we've got Richard the Mig Migliori from HRTV and also Frankie Lovato. And what we just found out was while the Mig was on hold, he said they actually know each other from way back. So let me get just a little bit of intro on you, Richard, and then we'll have you jump on here. But you were a winner of 4,450 races, 362 stakes, 25 grade one events. And, I mean, you had to retire because of a fall, but what an amazing career you have had, and we welcome you to the show. Happy Zenyatta Day.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I was happy that Zenyatta won Horse of the Year, but at the end of the day, if Blame had won it, it would have been fine as well. You know, they're all good horses, and it should be more of a celebration than a debate. That's the only thing I wish people would take away from it.
Well, we're definitely celebrating, and, you know, again, with her loss in the Breeders' Cup by a nose, I don't think she lost to any of us anyway with the effort that was put in, and I really think that, you know, it wouldn't have been a sad day for Blame to win, but gosh, we are just all such huge fans of Zenyatta, so you're going to have to probably just put up with us today.
No, I am too. I'm a huge fan as well, and I'm a huge fan of Frank Lovato. So he won the Eclipse Award the year before I did, and he was somebody I looked up to and wanted to ride like. So I'm glad we're on together.
Yay! Hi, Richie.
Hey, Frankie. I felt like it was a segment of Frank Lovato, this is your life. This voice is from your sixth grade teacher.
That's right. And Richie, you're speaking way too formal. This is a very sketchy crew we got here. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Be yourself.
Okay.
Oh, Richie and I, yeah, we go way back. Actually, before we both started our careers, we were galloping horses for separate trainers at Belmont Park. And we used to cross each other's paths on the horse path every morning, and we both knew what the goal was, and that was to get our jockey's license. So we had this we had this competition, but yeah, it was in pure love. When we look back at it now, it's just amazing memories of when we were kids and 16 years old and passing each other every morning on a horse path.
You were a lot older than me, though, Frankie. Don't forget that part.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to turn you in because I don't think you were 16 yet.
The statute of limitations ran out. So
I'm going to tell on you. You weren't supposed to be out there. But me and Richie, we had a lot of fun. Can you think of any stories, Richie, that you'd like to share?
This is a show they can't believe us. So I think we'll leave some of the stories out. No, I just, you know, one of my favorite memories with Frankie, though, was riding a horse that was legendary in New York called Pete Moss, and he would win on such crushing burdens, and I remember Frankie going to the scale one day, I think he carried like 145, Frankie, or maybe even more.
Yeah, 145 pounds.
and you know, you had so much tack and lead and equipment, and you know, I was like standing there, you know, I was just a kid and just in the room maybe, you know, a few months, and my eyes were like so big, I couldn't believe how much weight the horse had to carry, and then he won by about 9 or 10 lengths anyway, but that was one thing I do remember, you riding Pete Moss.
Yeah, you know, to add to that, the ironic part of riding Pete Moss at 145 pounds, which is, that day he carried more weight than any racehorse in history for that distance. That was like a first time in racing history, or at least in the record books. But the very next race, Richie, I had to ride a horse for Alan Jerkins that was in with 110 pounds.
Oh,
so
my God.
I had to, well, this is jockey talk, guys, but I had to reduce and draw up to make weight for the race that was after I rode the horse that was carrying the most weight. So if you can imagine, I had to be at my skinniest.
And what people don't understand is that, you know, like a horse like Pete Moss with all that weight and how strong he was, and it was a 2-mile race, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
You know, now you've lost weight to ride a horse later in the day, so you're probably not at 100% of the strength you'd like to be. And that's why jockeys are such amazing athletes, because whatever the conditions, whatever the circumstances, they rise to the occasion and do their job. And I know myself, a lot of times it would be adrenaline that would carry me through, because I had, you know, was so under the normal weight that I should have been. But that's part of our job, and I think that's why jockeys are amazing athletes. I hope people realize all that goes into it.
Hey guys, let's talk a little bit about who won the apprentice jockey last night, and that was Omar Moreno. Do you guys know him at all?
I don't.
You know, I don't know him at all, but I did catch a part of his speech, and I thought he was a really, really well-spoken young man, showed a lot of poise last night, and, you know, that'll stead him well going far in his career, because, you know, as a jockey, you not only have to have ability to ride horses, you have to have the ability to communicate to people and convey a certain amount of confidence and poise, and certainly from what I saw of him last night, he did that very, very well, and obviously, you know, he won a lot of races last year, so I think he's well-deserving. He might be somebody that actually could have a long future.
Yeah,
he won
agree.
$16 billion, almost $17 million last year. And, you know, he topped the annual North American leading jockeys list in 2010. He rode winners in 369 of his 1,400 mounts. That, you know, any baseball player would love those averages.
Yeah, those are really, really strong stats. I mean, Frankie and I, you know, started an era when a jockey made $6 million in purses. It was a record. I broke Steve Cawthon's record as a bug with $5.5 million in purses. So it just kind of shows you, you know, inflation-wise, where the purses have gone. But 369 winners is a lot of winners. I mean, well done. I mean, I really, really congratulate him.
And he beat out Garrett Gomez 124-60.
Well, no, that was Ramon Dominguez for older outstanding jockey.
Correct, yep.
And that was well-deserved, too. Ramon, you know, he didn't have a big impact in the Triple Crown races or the Breeders' Cup this year, but if you watch him day in, day out, he just always puts his horses in the right place, you know, always gives them an opportunity to win. And, you know, he got it out the hard way, riding the inner track in the winter and you know, never turned down a mount. This guy rides a 7,500 claimer as hard as he does a grade one horse. So I thought it was well-deserved.
Now, I want to jump in here and talk to you guys real quick, because we do have a lot of new listeners and a lot of people that aren't that super familiar with the racing world. And I'm absolutely loving listening to the two of you talk, because you're speaking racing language. But just to Frankie, I want you to jump in and just tell everybody, you know, the dramatic difference from going from 145 pounds to 110, that, you know, granted a lot of that's iron in the saddle pad, but that's you. You had to get down to under 110 pounds to make weight for this race, and then you had to add the tack on. And so we talk about what reducing is and that. And then I love it where you guys talked about being a bug and kind of explain what a bug is.
Okay, where do you want me to start? The weight?
Start with the weight, and then the MIG can do the bug.
Right. Well, unfortunately, there's all different methods to get your weight down. It's not, when I say unfortunately, it's not the healthiest means. But I used to reduce.
I was going to say, keep in mind, people are eating breakfast right now.
But there's all these different little tricks and stuff, and you have to build up a tolerance to being dehydrated and being able to perform, which it's really kind of sad to talk about, and it gets into a deep, dark subject. But I'll keep it light, just basically saying I was a reducer, meaning I used to hit the sweat box on a regular basis to get my weight down. Dieting and exercise gets you to a certain point where your body says, well, that's enough. You're not supposed to be any skinnier than this. But some of the jockeys aren't natural lightweights, so they have to take it to another level, to another extreme. So my thing was the sweat box, and I would spend anywhere from an hour to 2 hours a day sweating pounds off to make the weights for that day. And then when the races were over, I would replenish, and I mean you got to try to stay healthy, you got to try to take care of your body, but I would have to drink water. So the weight's only temporary; it's only water weight, and that would just be answering to the scale, making your weights. You perform, and then you drink some water and get that fluid back in those any electrolytes, the potassium back into your body with supplements and such, but. That's one way. But
that's a nice way.
But to give you an idea, though, like I had had a really bad fall about 20 years ago, and I was out 7.5 months. And during the recovery time, they had put me on a steroid regimen to help promote the healing. I had broken my neck, and at my heaviest point, I was 140 pounds during the healing process. Now, to be a jockey, you know, particularly in New York, you have to be around 112. So when I knew I was on my way back and I got the okay to start working out and getting on horses again, I got down to 118 pounds just completely dieting and doing everything with a nutritionist and being as strict as I could with my body, and that was as low as I could get. So once I got to 118, I was stuck, and I was already really, really being very, very disciplined to get to that point. But now I have to lose at least another 6 pounds, and that's when, like Frankie said, you have to start taking the water out of your system to make weights that are probably, well, not probably, are definitely archaic. It's when, you know, people were naturally smaller. I think if you look at the average size of American people today, it is bigger than they used to be because nutrition's better. So it's a very, very difficult thing to do, and it's a really tightrope walk to be able to make weight and be as strong physically and mentally as you need to be to ride every day. It's not like, you know, oh, I've got a game Sunday and I get down to that weight. You have to do this 5 or 6 days a week. So it's a lifestyle. It's not just for an event. It's a whole way of life. And it's a rare person that's able to do it with any sort of longevity.
Yeah, you guys are amazing.
Yeah, it is truly amazing what you guys do and how long you were able to do it. And I know you just retired, Meg. Are you actually doing work for HRTV now?
Yes, yeah. I do 2 shows a week from home for HRTV. I've been given a terrific opportunity by Amy Zimmerman of HRTV and Steve Nagler. And they brought me on board, and I spent 10 days out at the Breeders' Cup covering the works and preparation for the Breeders' Cup. And at the end of the month, I go to Florida to cover a weekend of racing. And it's been a great learning process for me. I love racing. I really love to be able to reach people and explain things about racing and hopefully spark some more interest. But I'm still an apprentice, so I have the bug in this. And that gets back to our other question. The reason they call apprentices bug boys is that on the program, depending if you're a 3-star apprentice, a 2-star apprentice, or a 1-star apprentice, and I'll explain that in a minute, there's a little asterisk, you know, denoting which level of apprenticeship you're at, and they look like bugs on the program. So that's what people started calling, oh, he's a bug boy. And that's why people say, oh, you had the bug. Instead, you're an apprentice.
I never knew
jockey.
That.
Yeah, that's how that came about. And you're a 3-star apprentice, or 3 bugs, if you haven't won 5 races yet in your career. And then once you've won 5 races, you go to a 2-star or 2 bugs, which now you get from 10 pounds off your mounts to 7 pounds off your mounts until you win 35 more races. And then you have 1 year from the date of your 5th win with 1 bug. So you're an apprentice for basically a year, and you can win as many races as you possibly can, like Omar Marino showed us 300 and some odd races in his bug year.
Wow. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you guys to get back a little bit to last night while we have you on here. Blaine didn't go away without an Eclipse Award. He won the older male, and Zenyatta won the older female award. And also, Goldakova did come away with the female Turf Horse Award. So all three of them did walk away with Eclipses last night.
And yeah, it was a great thing. I mean, they're all great horses. They're all champions. Nobody should be feeling bad this morning. And obviously, you know, Blaine's connections would have loved to have been Horse of the Year. But at the end of the day, it really, I think maybe too much is made of it. Zenyatta's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Blaine's going to throw a lot of babies that are going to go on to win big races. You know, nothing but good things came out of it.
And do you think, we asked Frankie this earlier, and Meg, I'd like to know, you just retired this past year. Do you think, well, first of all, we have talked about this on the show numerous times before, how racing really did need a Zenyatta at this time, and how racing really needs to become a sport that's followed by everyday people who maybe aren't the most serious bettors. They're not handicappers. They're people that like to watch horses run. And it used to be that way, and racing has gone in cycles over the past 100 years. And I think that we need more stories like Zenyatta to bring that back, don't you?
Absolutely. And what might have gone a bit unnoticed last night is that, Uncle Mo got champion 2-year-old colt, and that could be a passing of the torch. And what Zenyatta started, maybe Uncle Mo can pick up on and finish, because I think he's probably the most talented 2-year-old I've seen in a very, very long time. And he seems to have the mental and physical constitution to, start to think about, possibly a Triple Crown kind of horse. And as daunting a task as that is, this horse seems to have the tools to maybe get that done. He has tactical speed, but he's not rank, so he can place himself well in a race. Distance doesn't seem to be a problem. He's trained and ridden by the right connections. He certainly has the pedigree to get the distance of Belmont, certainly the mile and a quarter of the Kentucky Derby, but the Belmont, looking forward if he was to pass that test. So if Uncle Mo can pick up, and it's been, since 1978 we've had a Triple Crown winner, and somehow pull off maybe the toughest feat in all of sport, not just horse racing, and win the Triple Crown, the attention that'll garner on top of Zenyatta may really, really help our industry, back to a place.
And one of my favorite racing episodes that we did all year was the episode that we had the famous announcer and race caller from Mammoth Park and Gulfstream Park, Larry Kalmus. And, of course, he did the Triple Crown races this year as well. Well, we had him on to talk about the YouTube sensation video, The Race Between My Wife Knows Everything and My Wife Doesn't Know. So we had him on to talk about that, and take a listen. It was a lot of fun. You'll actually hear the video go first.
They're off. Little Miss Macho had a bit of an awkward start. My Wife Knows Everything broke well. Lady Mutata is up and on the pace. Rojo's Tune is out third. The Wife Doesn't Know fourth to the outside. And Eleni's Hope is fifth as they move for the first turn. On the far outside, Little Miss Macho is going up after that tardy start all the way up to battle with the leaders. On the lucky side is next. A ground-saving trip for Morningside Heights. Late for class in Miss Tallahassee or in the back of the field is Lady Mutata. Leads the way to the backstretch. And Little Miss Macho is second through a quarter of 24 and 2/5 seconds. Rojo's Tune third at the rail. And then comes My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know, followed by Eleni's Hope on the inside, 5 off the lead. 2.5 to Late for Class. To the outside on the lucky side, Morningside Heights along the rail. Miss Tallahassee is last. The half was in 48 and 3. Past the half mile pole, Lady Mutata by a length and a half. Little Miss Macho is in second. After that comes My Wife Knows Everything in third. On the far outside, The Wife Doesn't Know is moving up and is now fourth and right alongside of My Wife Knows Everything. My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know are moving together on the far turn, and they're coming after Lady Mutata coming to the quarter pole. Lady Mutata in front. Here come My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know on the far outside. Little Miss Macho is fourth or into the stretch. Lady Mutata, My Wife Knows Everything. Center of the track, The Wife Doesn't Know. Into the final furlong, My Wife Knows Everything. The Wife Doesn't Know. They're 1-2. Of course they are. My Wife Knows Everything in front. Sitting outside, the wife doesn't know. My wife knows everything. The wife doesn't know. My wife knows everything. More than the wife doesn't know. This Tallahassee was third, and Morningside Heights was fourth.
Yeah! Well, that was the best, that is the best race caller in the industry. We have Larry Colmus on with us from Monmouth Park. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you today?
We are great. Did you ever think, after you were done with that you would become a worldwide sensation and literally, in our minds, the best race caller of all time?
Well, thank you very much. I don't know. It was so weird, just the whole setup of the race. I didn't even realize until maybe an hour before that those horses were really in the same race together. It never even dawned on me until somebody told me. And after it was over, I started to get a few text messages from friends that they had, you know, that they thought it was a cute call, and I figured that would be the end of it. And then all of a sudden, things started to blow up, and people started to call from all over the place, and it was kind of shocking, believe me.
I bet it was. in a race like that, I mean, first of all, you had a lot of luck on your side in that the race ended in the order it did. I mean, how lucky could you possibly get in one day?
Oh, no doubt about that, and it was. Once I realized that those two horses were in the same race, my only thought was, just don't mess this up. Just, because the two names are so similar, just get it right and won't worry about it. And the funny part of the story, I had a friend of mine was visiting me in the announcer's booth at the time, and he was sitting in the back of the booth. And I remember, as the horses were making their way into the last turn, I could tell that the way that they were running that these two horses had a very good chance of running first and second. And I sort of glanced back at my friend and just shook my head like, oh, no. And here we go. And as it turned out, it went okay. You know, and I got through the call, and I was just, I let out that woo at the end. And that meant I was just so glad I survived, and that's all I cared about.
I bet you there are races with names. That, you know, that's got to be one of the hardest things about your job is there are races with names that when you put them all together, you just don't know how you're going to get to the race.
Yeah, some of them are tough. You know, it's funny, like the more difficult names are the easiest ones to remember because they're so hard, and sometimes it's the basic names that are tough. And so it doesn't bother me too much except for, you know, maybe if you have a horse with a ton of syllables, you know, and involved in a stretch run. Like we have one that runs in New Jersey in the summer a lot named Prestidigitation. I wish they had called the horse, you know, Magic or something like that. It's the same thing. But, you know, it's just one of those names that you're like, oh, don't get in a stretch run with another horse with tons of syllables because it's going to be tough to get it all out. But, you know, it's one of the jobs you have to do. It's fun.
I bet it's tough, Larry, when all of a sudden you have a bunch of Japanese horses, racing horses from Dubai, and then you've got unbelievably difficult pronunciations at the same time. How much time do you practice these names before you actually just call the race, or is it like right before you do it?
Well, I'll look at the beginning of the day pretty much and just go through the program and make sure I know who all the horses are, how to pronounce their names, and if I run into any problems, you know, you always say Google is your friend, and I'll start Googling, and I found a couple of handy websites for coming up with foreign pronunciations. I'm usually better with French because I took a lot of French in school, and I can get those out pretty well. But here in Florida, calling it Gulfstream Park, you have a lot of Spanish names, and that's not really my forte. So I do my best to try to get those down and handle it when the race comes.
Give us a little French racehorse name.
Yes.
I want to hear a French racehorse name.
French racehorse name. Boy, you're putting me on the spot. Let me think. My favorite was a horse that used to run in California named Le Roi des Animaux, which is French for the, it means the king of the animals, Le Roi des Animaux. And I love to throw that French stuff in there. You know, we've got, the pronunciation of one of my favorite jockeys, Julien Leparoux, and one of the best trainers, Christophe Clément. You know, so I'm kind of a Francophile. I really probably overdo it, but I enjoy it.
Keep doing it. It's kind of hot.
you have a cool job. But it's got to be difficult during a race. Do you have a big chart in front of you with the numbers and the names, or do you memorize it? How do you do it?
It's all a memorization process.
Wow.
When the horses come onto the track, I look at all the jockey silks. Now, all announcers have their own way. You know, some of them actually color in their programs with the jockey silk colors, and I found that to be not helpful for me just personally, so I don't do it. But what I'll do is I'll study all the horses in the race until I have every name in my head, meaning I can go through the entire field looking at them without looking down at the program. And then I know that I'm ready to go. And you know, once the race starts, you do have the track program in front of you as a crutch. You know, if you have to refer to it, and you get good after a while, after you've done it a bunch of times, where people don't know that you are looking at the program, trying to come up with a name, because it's you sort of are able to do it in a fluid motion. But you try not to. The best way to do it is to not look down at the program, and you just, you know, look through a pair of binoculars and follow the action and tell people what's going on.
Well, you know, we played earlier in the show, Larry, one of your other races, and that was the fog race that also has sort of taken off. That was funny. You did a good job with that one.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I enjoy fog every once in a while because, you know, you can't be wrong. Nobody can tell if you're right or wrong. You just go ahead and you just call the race. And yeah, I've had a lot of fun with fog races over the years, although they wear you out, because by the end of the day, and I know we had one day at Monmouth Park a few years ago where it was foggy the entire day, and you run out of material by the end of the day because you're trying to make up for the fact that you can't see any of the horses.
I like the honesty, though. I like the, and they're coming around the track, blah, blah, blah. Oh, wait, I just made all that up. I can't do anything. Honesty is the best policy, Larry, because if I was doing it, I even on a non-foggy day, it would sound like this. And the one horse is in the lead. Wait, here comes number four. Okay, wait, here comes number six. That would be my exciting race call. So, you know, fog or not, make it up. It was so funny when you said that. Oh, my gosh, I loved it.
You have to, every once in a while, you have to have a good time, especially in adverse conditions.
Well, now, started when you were 18 years old doing this. Did you grow up wanting to be an announcer or what?
No, the way it worked for me, my father was the fellow that put in the speaker system at a little track in Maryland called Timonium. And I went in there with him to kind of learn his job. He wanted me to, you know, take over from him, and he quickly, you know, found out that I was mechanically incompetent, and that wasn't going to happen, and I just totally fell in love with racing. Once I got to the track, I'm like, this is what I want to do, this is it, and I just didn't know what, and I used to watch all the racing replay shows and do impressions of the different announcers, and one of the guys up in the press box said, you know, you should try to do this for real. And so I said, okay, that sounds like a fun thing. I was, you know, 16 years old or whatever at the time, and I just got a pair of binoculars and a tape recorder and just started practicing. And then one day I was right place at the right time. The general manager of Pimlico heard me practicing calling races and offered me the job as the assistant announcer, and that's how I got started.
Wow. And you've been doing it ever since, and no wonder you're good at this. What's the biggest race have you ever called? I assume because they probably use their own track announcer. I don't know how that works. For the Derby and Triple Crown races, do they use their own announcers, or do they bring in announcers? How does that work?
Well, I've never called a Triple Crown race, but the way it works is the Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and Belmont, they all have their own announcer on track. However, they also have a network announcer for television, and Tom Durkin, who is the voice of New York Racing, he does that. So he'll call it for television, and the individual tracks will have their own announcer call the race. So I've never experienced that. I guess the biggest races for me have been on a regular basis, the Florida Derby and here at Gulfstream Park and the Haskell at Monmouth. But probably, you know, thinking about it, I had the opportunity this fall, which was very, very exciting, The folks at ESPN asked me if I would go to California and call Zenyatta's last race in California for them. And I was able to do that. So what a thrill. I mean, I think everybody knows how totally amazing Zenyatta is. And to be able to go out there and call that race on, you know, for television was, that was probably the biggest thrill for me. And that was just this past November. So, and of course she won, and it was just fantastic.
Now, did you get to go kind of meet her or anything like that after or before the race and kind of get to know a little bit about her?
Before the race, I did. That week, we were I was able to hang out with the people that do the ESPN show, and they took a couple of trips over to John Sheriff's barn, and I got to meet John, and we got to, you know, get close up to Zenyatta as she was doing a little grazing, and just watched her, do her thing. And I've just never seen any other horse like her. Just the total personality that, you know, she has, all these quirks, and I was just stunned, you know, by her presence, because she's just in a class of her own. Like, she's not from here. Like, she's from somewhere else, another planet or something. And it was really a thrill.
Now, was that number 19? Was that the second to last race? Was that the one that was the last one in Southern California that you did?
Correct. Yes, that was the one that was at Hollywood Park.
The Lady Secret one? Lady
right,
Secret, I think
lady,
it was.
Well, the Lady let's, Secret let's, race. And,
do you mind if we hear a little bit of the start?
I don't know if you, I mean, do you have it?
Let's see if this was you or not.
What's that?
Well, we'll see here if this was you or not.
Yeah, you might have Vic Stauffer,
Yeah, that's not you on that one.
Yeah, that's Vic. Yeah, Vic is the track announcer, and mine was on, if you went to the Breeders' Cup World Championships YouTube site, they might have it, but I'm not 100% sure. Might not be worth searching.
I mean, isn't what, you know, that, you know, that's got to be, I can see why that's one of your highlights, because obviously Zenyatta, we talk, Jamie is in love with Zenyatta, so she is, we were talking about her earlier today, not being in full. She, you know, since this show started back in November, we've been Zenyatta followers and fans ever since.
Yeah, how can you not be? I mean, she's just absolutely amazing, and hopefully, you know, they can get her back together with Bernardini and get her back in full. That's going to be a real thrill to see a Zenyatta baby out there, and hopefully that'll work out.
Well, there was a little bit of the interview we did with the caller of that race. My wife knows everything my wife doesn't know. And, of course, the caller of the Triple Crown this year as well, Larry Comas. And we hope to have him back again on the show soon. He was such a great interview, and we really enjoyed having him. Boy, when I listen back to these old clips, I realize how bad the sound is in some of them, and I hope we have improved at that over the years' period of time as well. And of course, our friend Templeton Thompson did a song dedicated to a champion horse out there, and that was Barbaro. And as she did this for the unveiling of the Barbaro statue in front of the Churchill Downs racetrack, where, of course, the Kentucky Derby is held. So this is I Love to Run.
This moment I lay all out on the line. Time to shine, time to rock and roll. I'm feeling a million butterflies. Oh, but I've never been so ready. Watch me when I hit my stride. Speed of light. Yeah, I'm strong and steady. Oh,
to start to fade if the day seems to have my number. Ain't no need to be afraid. I'll escape from the cloud I'm under. 'Cause I ain't in it for the fame or the pain or the so-called glory. I'm just living how I'm made. That's what they'll say when they tell my story.
Welcome back to Horses in the Morning. We are doing a recorded version today of all of our favorite race moments from the interviews we did over the year, the interviews about racing. Of course, we talked about Zenyatta. We've talked about My Wife Knows Everything. And now, of course, we cannot let out of this episode. Our adopted racehorse this year for the Kentucky Derby was Mucho Macho Man. And we've had quite a few interviews with the owners. And that, one of the owners of Mucho Macho Man, of course, is Patty Reeves. And Patty joined us way back on March. Let me see here. I'm taking a look. Way back on March the 24th before the Kentucky Derby to talk about her horse, Mucho Macho Man, who was going to be going into the Kentucky Derby. She has an incredible story and about how she came to find Mucho Macho Man and how she came about the name. So we thought this would be fun to play this one back as well. So enjoy Patty Reeves, the owner of Mucho Macho Man, before the Kentucky Derby back in March. This was off of episode number 104 on March the 24th.
Super excited to talk to her this morning because one of the Derby contenders for this year is a horse that Jennifer and I have been following. His name is Mucho Macho Man, and he just came off in February a win in the Risen Star Stakes, and he won that one, and it's perfect because he is pointed to the Derby. And you guys, since you know how the pre-race stuff and the Derby on NBC is all like these great stories and amazing, you know, pieces on how these horses got there. Well, in such a short time, this horse's story has just gotten bigger and better. And also, you know, because of us too. So are the numbers of fans on his Facebook page. I am a friend of his online, much like I am a friend of his Zenyatta's. And we're going to talk to Patty Reeves right now, the owner of Macho. Good morning, Patty.
Hi, good morning.
Well, it is a pleasure to talk to you. You guys have a huge weekend coming up. Macho, of course, is running in the $1 million Louisiana Derby. So how are you guys getting ready for that?
Oh, gosh, we're so excited. Well, we got here in New Orleans yesterday, and we visited him at the barn when he arrived, and he arrived safely. He's a little bit jet-lagged, but he's feeling fine. He gave me lots of kisses, and we're just getting ready for Saturday.
Was that you getting the kisses on the Facebook page?
That be me, yes.
Oh, my God, that was so cute.
Thanks.
Is he really that friendly? Is he super friendly?
You know, he has not been, and I see it as a sign that he is maturing. You know, he's a late foal, and every time I see him, either he's getting to know me better or he's just growing up a little bit, and he's not as feisty as he was, although he still is somewhat feisty, so you have to be careful around people he doesn't know.
Right. Well, if you saw the movie Seabiscuit, or I'm sorry, Secretariat, you'll realize that, like, in that movie, it was very Disney because they're loving on and smooching on him, and Secretariat, you know, is a three-year-old stud colt, and now you know the experience of being around these racehorses at that time. You don't want to put your face very close to their face at all, except for snapping that quick photo that you did.
Exactly, yeah. Yesterday, he snapped at my father-in-law and got him pretty good on the hand, so we're careful.
Oh, no. Well, let's back up a little bit, because I want to know how and when did you guys get Macho?
We got Macho. My husband, Dean, and I purchased him last year, and it was after Dean had watched a race that our trainer asked us to look at to buy another horse who's a fabulous horse called Gourmet Dinner. And Dean was looking to buy Gourmet Dinner, and when he watched the race, he said to our trainer, Tim Ritvo at the time, said, "Tim, call me crazy, but I like the horse that came in second place, which was Mucho Macho Man." So Tim mm-hmm. went back and looked at the tapes and said, "You know, you may have something here." So that's how we got Mucho Macho Man, and you know, either way, we couldn't have gone wrong because Gourmet Dinner is a fabulous horse, too.
Well, so is your husband a horse person? Has he always been a horse person, or did he just kind of get lucky in seeing Mucho Macho Man?
Well, a little of both. We're not really horse people. We've never had horses until about 3 years ago. It was always a dream of Dean's to have some horses, but he didn't know much about the business, and about 3 years ago, we met another couple while we were on vacation in the Turks and Caicos Islands, and the woman and I sort of hit it off working out at the gym on the treadmill together, and that evening, we ran into them at a restaurant and invited them to sit with us and have a drink over dinner, and the husband brought up horses, and turns out they had some race horses, and he had been in the winner's circle 57 times.
Oh, my gosh.
And, and they had had a horse named Technology who had won the Florida Derby years ago and had been in the Kentucky Derby. And so next thing you know, the two men were plotting to maybe buy their first horse together. And it was sort of the mentor that Dean needed, you know, someone, because you can't just walk up and say, "Oh, I want to buy a horse." You got to know the people, the trainers, and the, you know, where to go and this and that. So Bob and Esther became our fast friends, and they sort of guided us into this and took Dean to the auction, and Bob and Dean bought their first horse together, and that's how it began.
Okay, time out. So you guys have been doing this for 3 years, and your friend has been in the winner's circle 57 times. Has he ever been close to going to the Derby?
Yes. Bob and Esther had a horse. Yep, he had a horse named Technology, and they took him to the Derby. I don't know what the year was, but that was a real successful horse. He didn't win, but he was in the Derby.
Yeah, it's amazing just to actually get there and the qualifications that you have to go through to get your horse to even there. But I just, that's incredible. You're on a treadmill, you meet some girl, you guys start drinking together, and then your husbands are conspiring to buy horses, and boom, 3 years later, you got a horse that's pointed to the Kentucky Derby. What an awesome story. I love that. That's great.
Thanks.
Well, I know just on the business end a little bit, you guys had a little bit of a stress going into the last race, the Risen Star, because your jockey, Ivar Koa, was injured right before, like the day before the race. And you guys had to get a new rider in less than 24 hours. What was the stress like, and how confident were you in your new jockey, Rajiv Mirage?
Well, we've always been confident in Rajiv. We knew him from Saratoga last year, and he had actually ridden the horse once. But when it was Friday night, the night before the Risen Star, and we were here in New Orleans, and we learned about Ivar Koa, and what was even more ironic, in that accident that happened at Gulfstream, there were two jockeys involved. The other one was Paco Lopez, I think. And both of those jockeys were going to be riding our horses the next day. Like, what are the chances of that?
Right.
And the other jockey was not so seriously injured. I think he chipped his elbow. But Ivar, you know, it was very, very serious. And so, of course, our first concern was for him, and is he going to be okay? And then we realized we're stuck out here, and we don't have another jockey. And as luck would have it, I mean, we were just blessed. Rajiv Mirage was coming out to New Orleans anyway to ride another horse that day. And we were able to make contact with him, and he said he would be honored to ride Macho, and the rest was history. He won. It was just great.
That's incredible. These guys are just amazing. To hop on a horse every so often and then take it in a race, and then, I mean, you know, just riding horses, it's scary enough to just gallop one. These guys just full speed ahead. Never ridden the horse before. Sure, I'm going to go win this race. It's incredible. But I have to talk to you. I know we're running short on time, but you have to tell us a little bit about Kathy, your trainer, and the amazing, amazing story associated with her.
Oh, yeah. Kathy is awesome. Kathy is, I think she's 41 years old. She's a mom. She's got two children, a boy and a girl, 16 and 17. And 2 years ago, she was on her deathbed. She watched the Kentucky Derby from her hospital room with her cardiologist. She had a deteriorating heart condition that her dad passed away of, her brother also had, and they didn't think she was going to make it. And fortunately for her, she was able to get a heart transplant, and it was successful. And it has now been 2 years, and bless her heart, she is out there every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning and works as hard as anybody in this business does. It's just amazing. She has a true love for it, and she has such a strong spirit. She's a hard worker. She loves what she does, and as she says, every day to her is just a gift of life.
Okay, so it makes me emotional even listening to it, because here's this woman who has lost family members to this disease, and she's sitting there waiting, you know, basically waiting on a heart transplant, and she's watching the racehorses. She gets it. She comes back, and I'm sorry, but this is not a sport for the faint of heart. Typically, racehorses. It's just incredible, and she's doing great, and she's strong and healthy and happy.
She is. She has to take 31 pills a day, and she has to be very careful, especially, you know, around the barn with all the dust and everything. But she does it.
Oh, my gosh. That's just incredible. So you've got obviously a big weekend for all of you. Now, this is just girl to girl. If you guys go to the Derby, do you have your outfit picked out already? Do you know what you're going to wear?
Oh. The funny thing about that, I have been to the Derby only once in my life, so this is a huge, big deal for me.
and I have several outfits that I've bought, but I'm not sure if any of them work yet because I couldn't decide what comes first, the hat or the outfit. And so as a result, I have three different dresses and four different hats, but none of them match each other.
I see more shopping in your future.
Oh, yeah, you got to.
You know what? Wait till after this weekend. When he wins this weekend, you'll be able to do all the shopping you want. You'll be fine.
Hey, man,
it'll be good.
I hope so.
First of all, I think that the outfit has to be designed around the shoes, typically. However, when you're at the Derby, you're going to be on your feet a lot, and you're going to be, like, running down to the winner's circle, hopefully, knock on wood. So you want to have something fashionable and functional at the same time. Obviously, the hat has to be just gorgeous because your photograph is going to be plastered over everything. You're going to be on camera the entire time. So you got to think fashionable yet functional. That's where I would go.
I think you're just trying to make you nervous here.
I'm totally nervous about it because I already have this really cute pair of white spectator pumps that go with one of the dresses perfectly. And then when Dean told me about the part that we get to walk on the track from the barn to the paddock, I was in tears because I thought, no, my shoes. But I've figured out, okay, I'm going to have to bring a change of shoes and something I can wear on the track and then slip back into my heels when I get back to watch the race or something. I'll have to figure it out.
Now, here's what I do, and I did in my single days after a long night of partying out at the clubs or something. And, you know, you've got to have your big slouch purse. And inside your purse, you put your comfy shoes. Like, you slide your flip-flops on inside the big purse. So when your feet hurt and you got to walk to your car at 2 in the morning, you just change shoes. So it's a brilliant idea, and you could totally transfer that into the Derby. Just have a big old purse and have your pumps in them, and then you can flip-flop. I love it.
I tell you, you mentioned Zenyatta. It would be great to talk to people. Like, I even thought about trying to reach out to Ann Moss because she's one of the people I really look up to and find out, you know, someone should help us new people, you know, pass it on down. And I would be happy to do that in subsequent years to other people.
I that's a great idea. Yeah, you don't listen to my advice. I'm no fashion goddess, okay? So you probably should talk to Ms. Moss. She's been through this a couple different times, I'm sure. So that'd probably be a better call. Don't listen to me.
Well, just what to expect that day. I mean, I'm overwhelmed just with the thought of all the preparations and what's going to go on that day. And I guess I'll just roll with the punches and go with it. So we're really looking forward to it.
Well, just good luck, you know, on the road to the Derby, but also good luck this weekend. I know this is a huge race, and if anybody, you know, try to find it on TV, the Louisiana Derby, Mucho Macho Man is the horse. I think he's officially my Derby favorite because I'm just rooting for you guys immensely, and just wish you the best of luck. And thank you so much for coming on and being on our show.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I tell you, win or lose at the Derby, we already feel.
And in case you've forgotten the Kentucky Derby for 2011 already, take a listen.
They're in the gates. And they're off in Derby 1:37, and dialed in was very slow to begin. Comer to the top takes the early lead, decisive moment towards the inside. Shackleford is flashing early speed. Pants on Fire is racing in fourth with Soldat towards the outside, and then Mucho Macho Man, Nero, and then towards the outside is Watch Me Go, and dialed in is absolute last. Shackleford leaves them with a circuit to go. Comer to the top in second. Soldat's in third. Pants on Fire in fourth. Decisive moment is racing in fifth. And then Nero in sixth towards the outside. Mucho Macho Man is racing in seventh. Stay Thirsty is in eighth. Midnight Interlude is in ninth. Watch Me Go is in 10th. Santiva is in 11th. In 12th is Twin Spired. In 13th is Animal Kingdom. In 14th on the inside, Master of Hounds. 15th is Brilliant Speed. A break of three lengths back then to Twice the Appeal, who's racing just in advance of Arch, 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 and then Derby Kitten, and then a further 2.5 lengths. The favorite dialed in. Absolute last to the half of 48-3 in Derby 1:37. They have 5/8 to go, and Shackleford still leads the way. to Comer to the top on the outside in second. To the inside, Decisive Moment is racing in third. And then Pants on Fire in fourth. Soldat is in fifth. Towards the inside, Stay Thirsty tries to make ground as they make the far turn. And it is Shackleford who leads the Derby field. To Comer to the top, who's racing in second. Towards the inside now is Decisive Moment, who begins to lose ground. Here on the outside comes Nero, and Nero is making a giant move round the outside as they come towards the quarter pole in the Kentucky Derby. And towards the inside, it's Shackleford. Nero to the outside. Comer to the top, followed by Pants on Fire, then Animal Kingdom, followed by Mucho Macho Man, then Santiva, Stay Thirsty, Brilliant Speed, but it's Shackleford who still leads. Here's Nero on the outside, and Animal Kingdom is pouncing late on the John Velasquez. It's now Animal Kingdom on the outside, who goes the lead for John Velasquez, and he's going clear by two lengths and running to the line. Animal Kingdom wins the Derby. Nero in second. In third came Mucho Macho Man. In fourth was Shackleford, and then Master of Hounds, Santiva, Brilliant Speed, and then Pants on Fire, and Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion and John Velasquez, who took Derby 1:37.
And there was the race, and of course, Mucho Macho Man came in third, as you just heard, and we did an interview with Patty after that as well, so you can take a look back. Just, by the way, if you ever want to find anything on our website, you just go to horsesinthemorning.com, and in the little search box up in the upper right-hand corner, just type whatever you want to find. It'll bring up the episodes that we talked about those things. So if you just put in Patty Reeves, you'll find all the episodes that we've talked to her, and we talked to her husband, so you want to check those out. It's a lot of fun, and it's also an easy way to find past episodes, find things that we have discussed in the past. Well, this will wrap up our favorites for racing in the year 2011. We'll be back again with more shows this week with some more of our favorite best ofs. I think you'll enjoy it, so be sure to tune in again tomorrow and Thursday and Friday, and of course, next Monday we'll be back live again. We hope you are enjoying your holidays. We hope that you are staying safe, that you're getting some rides in. We certainly are, I guarantee you, enjoying a little break here. I think for sure Jamie is enjoying a break from me, and Jennifer never gets a break from me because we kind of are married, so poor Jennifer. But to have a great day, everybody. Be safe. Wear your helmets. And as Jamie would say, spay, neuter, and what was that other thing? Oh, geld. And oh, by the way, Jamie, you know, short nose reigns.